My name is Tim Vining. I'm the Executive Director of the Thomas Merton Center, and I'd like to thank you all for coming out here today. As we gather here in front of the Federal Building, President Bush is trying to get a blank check from Congress to commit American troops to engage in an unprovoked, unilateral military attack against the people of Iraq. We cannot imagine a worse thing that George W. Bush could do to further endanger the lives of Americans and others, both at home and abroad. However, we are not without hope. There are those courageous voices within the Congress who are trying to put a stop to Bush's war drive. Among them, our very own Congressman William J. Coyne. And we are very happy to have with us today Congressman Coyne to speak of his opposition to the current war resolution before Congress. Congressman Coyne.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. I want to say it's a great pleasure to join the Thomas Merton Center here today in letting the people of Pittsburgh and Western Pennsylvania know that there is no need to rush into war in Iraq. At best, the administration is talking about a venture like this to come about in January or February. And so there's no need for Congress to be voting on a resolution like that, as we will be this week. It just appears to me, from my observations in Washington, is that the administration in Washington, the Bush administration, doesn't want to take yes for an answer. Iraq has said already that they will allow inspectors to come in and have freedom to go where they want and inspect. I think we ought to test that promise first before we commit our young people to another war in Iraq. Each one of us knows here that after the last Persian Gulf War, we had veterans coming back from that war and talking about the ailments that they had as a result of chemical exposure in the Persian Gulf, and we haven't completely taken care of those people who served in the Persian Gulf War. And they'll be heard from, too, as this debate continues. But for now, I really appreciate the Thomas Merton Center and the supporters of the Thomas Merton Center coming out and making it be known that we should not rush headlong into a war in Iraq. Thank you.
Our next speaker is internationally known for his work for peace and justice, Professor Dennis Brutus.
Thank you, Tim. And thank you to all of you who have come out on this occasion to take a stand in support of peace and against war. War is a terrible business. It kills the innocent as well as the guilty. It'll kill the military as well as civilians. And before this country rushes into war, before George Bush commits this country to war, I believe it is important that people should think very deeply about the consequences and the effects of war, its effects on the people on whom the war is inflicted, as well as its effects on those who take action, who are dehumanized in the process of ruthlessly killing others, men, women, and children. And so there should be a great deal of consideration before there is a rush to action. And so I hope the people of the United States, people in Congress, people like Congressman Coyne and others who are gathering together and taking a stand, together with all those who are committed for peace, together we are building an opposition which says, let us not rush into a war when in fact the evidence is so slim, when in fact the demands that we have made are being met, that under those circumstances there should not be a rush to war. I want to make a special appeal to two sections of our community. It seems to me that the media in some parts of the country are presenting it as if the people of the United States are anxious to rush into war. The truth is that many people have very serious doubts, very serious reservations. And so I want to thank those in the media who are presenting these facts honestly, who are indicating clearly that there are many people in this country who are opposed to rushing into war. We do not want people in the media to be drum beating and cheerleading for war. We want them to present the truth as it is, and that truth is that the majority of people in this country are opposed at this point, are opposed to rushing into war, and the media must present that fact accurately. There's another deeply troubling section of the population, and I want to appeal to them as well. It is strange to find how many people there are in Christian communities who claim to be fundamentalists, who claim to be right, who claim even to be expecting that a war would help to expedite the return of the Messiah in the second coming, and are using that as part of their argument in support of war. I want to beg them to consider the destruction, the suffering, the cruelty that will be inflicted on people because of what they see as some spiritual or religious or theological justification for war. I appeal to them, I beg them to consider the enormous suffering that is inflicted on people as a consequence of war. And in the name of their own Christian humanity, their own Christian belief, I am appealing them to speak out against this war and not to be in favor of it. We want a just, humane society for all people, where all people are respected, where all people's beliefs are respected. And we say no to war and yes to peace. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Edith Bell with the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom.
Thank you. President Bush says we have to get rid of Saddam Hussein. What if Chirac or France would propose getting rid of George Bush? He threatens other countries, he has weapons of mass destruction, and the United States has used them. He does not care about his own people, the poor who work hard and don't earn a living wage. He only cares about his rich friends. No concern about child care, health care, housing, vanished retirement funds. Let's go to war, he says. I'll take our minds off the problems of daily living. Rumsfeld and Rice say we have no choice. Why Iraq and not North Korea or Saudi Arabia, where the Saudis who attacked us last year? But why war at all? Maybe we need to test our new weapons. Surely keeps the military industries from fizzling wealthy. Some of our democratic leaders want to talk economy before the elections, give the president what he wants, and get this war talk over with. Over with? War costs not only money, but lives. It's not a chess game. Lives of soldiers, lives of civilians, so-called collateral damage. A terrible euphemism. American lives, Iraqi lives, and other lives. This war may very well turn into World War III. How many lives are we willing to sacrifice for this good cause, for a good cause, for this dubious cause? Abraham was willing to sacrifice his son Isaac because he heard God tell him to do so. What right does our president have to sacrifice other people's sons and daughters? Our government talks about numbers, but each death will be mourned by friends, family, and the community. I'm not even going to talk about financial cost, which according to the Congressional Budget Office will be $3.5 billion for Pennsylvania alone, meaning more cuts in funding for education, health care, public transportation. Our government has not shown urgent and immediate danger to our country nor the world. Therefore, I demand from our Senator Specter and Santorum and all other elected officials in Washington to take a stand against the president's resolution, which would give him a blank check to invade Iraq whenever he wants to. I'm glad Congressman Coyne is taking a stand, and I thank him for that. The United States must work with the United Nations, the organization founded and dedicated to solving international disputes. Stop the president and his quest for war. Stop the war in Iraq. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Reverend Jack O'Malley with the Association of Pittsburgh Priests.
Thank you, Tim. I'm proud to be here today, and across this country, people are speaking this particular day to remind our representatives that the calls that are coming into their office should be heard. We are told that the calls are 50 to 1, 100 to 1 in many places against this invasion. I'm also proud to be Roman Catholic priest when the Pope and the bishops have been clear for years being against the embargo against Iraq and now saying there's no justification for a unilateral preemptive strike in Iraq. They couldn't be more clear about this. And they go over the criteria for a just war, and in all the criteria that they examine, they say that more harm can be caused in an unstable area than the good that can come out of this war. We know that in our own communities, people are hurting financially. Can you imagine in parts of the world where it's so unstable, where the Pope has said this is what breeds terrorism? When there's injustice and equality, people are desperate. So will a war create more terrorists? And I think that's the question we all have to ask ourselves. The other things the bishops and the Pope have said is that all life is precious. All life is precious, and we have not exhausted the dialogue. We do not have the international community and the United Nations aboard. And if we act, we're acting more unilaterally. So I would plead with our legislators, as has been pleaded by the leaders of all churches, saying what we need is justice and not vengeance. Thank you very much.
Our next speaker speaker is Molly Rush, longtime peace activist and organizer of the Thomas Merton Center.
I think this vote before Congress is going to have the impact of the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, which was shown to be a total misrepresentation of the situation at that time in Vietnam. And today we're seeing much the same. We're watching as the president and his advisors keep coming forth with different, almost on a weekly basis, with different justifications for going to war against Iraq. You know, first, you know, it was the connection with Al-Qaeda, which didn't fly, so now we go to another and another and another. The fact is, Mr. Bush seems to be totally committed to going to war first, as a first resort, not as a last resort, as a first resort. And that is totally against our national history of trying to limit the possibility of war, of trying to develop an international effort through the United Nations, through other efforts, to say that an attack against another nation, a preemptive attack, is a total violation of international law. Now, the argument is that we can't wait because perhaps a nuclear weapon might be in the offing. But most agree that the Iraqi government is nowhere near at this point of having that kind of capability, and far from having a capability to use it beyond its own region. It is not there. It is not there. The inspectors that left the region after 95% of the mass destructive capability of Iraq was destroyed by the result of international pressure and the international work of the United Nations, the reason those inspectors left was because the U.S. was using the inspection process as part of a spy effort. That has something to do with why those inspectors aren't there today. And I think it's very important that we use the opportunity for inspections and to try to see that those inspections be as strongly carried out as is necessary to say that, I'm losing sound, to say that the possibility of creating a war which has implications we can't even begin to think about. What are the implications on the ground in Iraq the day after any military victory? What are the implications for a nation that's divided in its own basic integrity because it was a nation that was put together after the colonial period? And there will be many, many opportunities for disagreement and worse in that country. For a nation that's been destroyed, already destroyed in its infrastructure and further destroyed and civilians killed in a war that is aimed at one man but will reach thousands, perhaps tens of thousands in its destructive capability, in a region that is bubbling with the possibility for major war. What are we thinking?
Next speaker is Saleh Wazirudin, and he is the co-founder of Z and the Free Gate 2 Coalition.
Another war based on lies. The Bush administration is using lies and dangerous reasoning to try to convince American workers to take away the basic rights of Iraqis and to plunge us into yet another war. On September 18th, Donald Rumsfeld told the Senate Armed Services Committee that asking for perfect evidence is out of date. We're not asking for perfect evidence. We're just asking the Bush administration to stop lying to us and tell us the truth so we can make our collective decisions democratically. Bush said, "I don't know what more evidence we need," referring to a report of the International Atomic Energy Commission that Iraq in 98 was 6 months away from developing nuclear weapons. Yet Joseph of the Washington Times reported 2 Fridays ago that the agency's chief spokesman, Mark Wasdecki, has said, "There's never been a report like that issued from this agency. There is no evidence, in our view, that can be substantiated on Iraq's nuclear weapons program. If anybody tells you they know the nuclear situation in Iraq right now, in the absence of 4 years of inspections, I would say that they're misleading you. I don't know where they have determined that Iraq has retained this much weaponization capability, because when we left in 98, December 98, we had concluded that we had neutralized the nuclear weapons program. We had confiscated their fissile material. We had destroyed all their key buildings and equipment." That spokesman added that no other agency or government has any evidence that Iraq has nuclear capability right now. But attacks on Iraq have already been underway for several years, and these too are based on lies. One such attack shows the world what we can expect from a full-scale war in Iraq. Scott Taylor of the Ottawa Citizen in the summer of 2000 reported on what he found on the ground when he looked into an attack on what Lieutenant Commander Ernest Duplessis, spokesman of the U.S. Central Command, called a storehouse for air defense equipment and weapons. Here's what the reporter said. "Two large blackened craters marked the actual point of impact in an empty lot some 300 meters in front of the train station. The shrapnel from these rockets damaged nearby houses but caused only superficial damage to the warehouse. If this lightly damaged building was the U.S. jet's intended target, and it's the only facility even close to the impact area, then the Pentagon's initial intelligence reports were faulty. A portion of the Samoa warehouse is now used as an administrative office for food distribution, while the remainder, formerly an auto parts center, has long since been empty, as evidenced by the mounds of pigeon droppings heaped on the floor. In total," this is what the reporter says, "19 civilians were injured in the August 11 attack, and two of the warehouse employees were killed. In interviews with several surviving victims, all claimed that there were no sirens and no anti-aircraft fire preceding the attack. The Central Command has called this an air defense facility." The Pentagon is saying its weapons are precision guided. One of these weapons, JSOW, the Joint Standoff Weapon, spreads 145 bomblets over an area 100 by 200 feet wide. And at least when they were used in February, 26 out of 28 launched fell out of even the general area they were aimed at. This is according to William Arkin of the Washington Post. "I urge people in America to organize to spread the truth about what's already happening in Iraq and how the Bush administration wants to make it worse. Talk to your neighbors, talk to your friends, table the streets of Pittsburgh to stop Bush's push for war. Killing civilians because of a lie will not make us safer."
Next speaker is Reverend David Herndon, minister of the First Unitarian Universalist Church.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate the opportunity to be here to speak with you all today. I'd like to read a statement that has received very wide support within the Unitarian Universalist community here in Pittsburgh, both among the professional religious leaders and the lay people as well. "As Unitarian Universalists, we are committed to justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, use of the democratic process, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, and respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Therefore, we call upon the President of the United States of America, the United States Congress, and elected government officials to do the following. Number one, refrain